Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. On this episode, the Golden Globe and Emmy Award-winning actor Bryan Cranston, very excited to have him on. We talk about everything from his childhood, what got him into acting, his broken home, working on Breaking Bad, the movie Trumbo, and a whole host of other things. Really fascinating interview, super nice guy, and he's got a really interesting way that he figures out what project he wants to work on next. So I really had a great time talking to him. Enjoy it. Thanks for checking out the podcast, and tell your friends and family about it. Send the link around, and please follow me on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at Paul Mercurio, M-E-C-U-R-I-O. You guys are the best. Thanks for checking it out. Enjoy the podcast.
Very excited to have a very special guest, Tony Award winner for portraying President Lyndon Johnson on Broadway, and a six-time Emmy winner, clearly an underachiever, for Breaking Bad, four Emmys for lead actor and two for producing, Bryan Cranston. Thank you so much for being on the show with me, Bryan. I appreciate it.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're in D.C. right now, right?
I am. We're on the press tour of Trumbo, and it's taken us Los Angeles, New York, D.C., Chicago. Yeah.
You are in my old stomping ground. I went to law school in D.C.
And, oh, did you?
Yeah, and then practiced for a little bit, and then quit to be a comedian and actor. So it's a kind of quite
good career move.
Quite a journey. Yeah, I said, how can I give my mother a heart attack instantly? I know. Just apropos of nothing, by the way, I'm from Rhode Island, and there's a city named Cranston, Rhode Island. You probably know that, but...
Yes, there is. I know. And I think, you know, there's some... I don't know if there's any connection to it. I know that my people on my father's side came over from Ireland. I went from Ireland in through Montreal, Canada, and down, down the eastern seaboard and Chicago and that sort of thing. So I don't know if they ever stopped in Cranston, Rhode Island.
Yeah, there's a lot of Irish in and around Providence and Cranston. They were all the cops, and the Italians were the troublemakers who were getting into it with the with the cops.
Right.
Also, baseball. Before, I want to talk about the movie, obviously, but real quick. Baseball is a big thing for you. Did you play it? My kid plays, and so it's big in our family right now. He's a middle infielder. Did you play as a kid?
I did, all through the years. I think I started when I was five with T-ball and played all the way into high school. Mm-hmm. Although high school, I wasn't very well-served because I was confused and very introverted, and I didn't have a work ethic yet, so I didn't really apply myself, and I learned in high school that at that level, I really would have had to, you know, play hard and to you know, make the team and do all that. And that's like, I just got to a point where I realized I think I've hit the end of my talent right. level.
It's true. My son is going through that now. He's trying to put more, he's in high school, he's trying to put more weight on. He's drinking shakes. He's eating six times a day. And there's that whole focus thing. And you were introverted just by nature. I know your family was broken up. Was it sort of just trying to figure out what you wanted to do? But you're still a teenager, so you're not trying to figure out your career path yet, are you?
Well, don't we ask our teenagers to do that? Look, at age 16, we're thinking, okay, think about where you're going to apply to college.
Yeah.
What do you want to do for the rest of your life? That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You're a 16-year-old. What do you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I didn't.
So, I think it was partly due to a breakup of my family and a divorce, and my father left the family, and I didn't see him for 10 years.
Mm.
So there was that to deal with, and I think my foundation, or at least my impression of it, was cracked, and I didn't feel secure.
Yeah.
And that then manifested by being insecure in school and socially and that sort of thing. And really, it was kind of depressing because I always felt I'm not the person I thought I was, or I'm not becoming, or what's happening.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the life experience to be able to say, oh, this is one of those things, I'll pull out of it. You know, so it was just it was an uncomfortable period. Mm. And I guess I just had to go through in order to say, I now know what that's like, and I don't want to revisit that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until after that, when I was 22, that I realized, oh, I know what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
Who I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I went through that after I was practicing law. I was on Wall Street doing corporate law, and I thought, you know, I had the plan, you know, work 25 years, partnership, picket fence, 2.2 kids, and then I wrote some jokes as a hobby, and I went to a private function, and I gave them to Jay Leno, and I said, I don't know if you want jokes. I don't know what to do with them, and he hired me the next day to send jokes in for the Tonight Show monologue.
Wow.
And then the following week called me to tell me he was doing one of my jokes on the Tonight Show that night for $50. He paid me $50 a joke, and I went with my girlfriend, now my wife, to another couple's apartment here in New York and popped some champagne and watched him do my joke, and it blew my head off my shoulders. And then it started me down this path of, like, trying to figure out where I should go, stay with the security of what I have or pursue my passion, and it was a really scary time. So I totally understand that feeling.
It's exactly what I went through.
Yeah.
I had gone to college to study police science.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought that would be the avenue that I should pursue. I had some experience with it when I was 16 years old, and I joined what was called the Police Explorers, sanctioned by the LAPD, and a branch of the Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were 111 16-year-old cadets all from all over parts of Los Angeles, and we had to go to the LAPD Academy and in the Legion Park and near Dodger Stadium up there for 8 weeks, 8 Saturdays in a row, and you know, all kinds of scholastic training and physical training and marching and crowd control and all sorts of things.
Mm.
And I graduated first in my class.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, at 16, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do. Okay. And so until I was 19 and my first acting class as an elective in college, and I was able to kiss a girl in a scene, and I went, oh my God, what just happened? I kissed this girl, I made out with this girl,
yeah,
and that was part of my job in this class.
Oh my God.
And it, like you said, it blew my head off, and
yeah,
like, from that point on, I couldn't, it's like, okay, I'm done with police science. Now it's all about this acting thing, and it was fun.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I better really learn this and become good at it if I can.
Mm.
And that's the same thing. I decided to pursue something I loved,
and
hopefully got good at it, as opposed to pursuing something I was good at but didn't love.
Yeah, and you had a little bit of history in that in your family. And by the way, every rock musician that you talk to, same reason they got into the business, girls, to impress
girls,
the girls and get laid. It's like,
yeah,
it's
awesome. I mean, that's it. And then you're like, so if you left it up to, you know, teenage boys, that's what the profession
right,
they'd all choose.
Right. I actually say, I recently I've been doing a joke. I say great things have been achieved by men because women have used sex in a way to get them to do things, like the caveman only invented fire because there was a woman whining, it's too cold to have sex, and then boom.
It's too cold to have sex. And they did it through grunting.
There you go, exactly. your dad was a bit of an actor, and that, so you had a little bit of that in the family, and so it wasn't totally unfamiliar to you, obviously.
No, my mom and dad met in Hollywood in an acting class after the war, World War II, and boy, they started a hot and heavy relationship, and in those days, when that happens, you get married.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did, and had 3 kids.
Mm-hmm.
Things were going great for quite a while, until I was about 11, and then things went terribly wrong.
Yeah.
And so that puts you on another trajectory.
Yeah. Which all informs your acting, I'm sure. I mean, I want to talk more about what your process of acting and something you've said, but I do want to talk about Trumbo, which we're talking about right now because it's out in a great movie about Dalton Trumbo, who was one of the blacklisted writers in Hollywood back in the 40s and 50s, and he served a little over a year in prison for contempt of Congress for refusing to answer questions about his communist beliefs. And then he went on under pseudonyms to win 2 Oscars for Roman Holiday and The Brave One, and then he wrote Spartacus that Kirk Douglas had the guts to let him put his name on. And in talking about making this movie and understanding his life, you said, quote, "It's not a calm story to tell." And I was fascinated by that. What do you mean by that?
A calm story, did I say?
It's not a calm story to tell. Like, meaning, I guess that there's a lot going on there behind.
There's a tempest going on,
yeah.
It's a story of the loss and the threatened loss of civil liberties.
Mm.
You know, our country is founded on that principle of free speech.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom to assemble, freedom to practice whatever religion you choose, freedom to join and be a part of whatever political party you choose, without persecution.
Right.
And at this particular time, in the late 40s, the House Un-American Activities Committee decided to discard that and compel testimony under the threat of imprisonment to throw away your First Amendment rights and demand that you answer these questions for purposes of persecution.
Mm-hmm.
They decided for a little while to possibly just plead the Fifth Amendment so they cannot self-incriminate. But then they realized, but why? Why would we say that? We've committed no crime.
Mm.
No crime was committed. These 10 men went to prison for no crime. The committee was not pleased with their answers.
Mm.
Plain and simple. They were not going to cooperate.
Mm.
And the committee was very angry with their not willing to cooperate and answer these questions in a yes or no fashion as they demanded.
Mm.
And the whole point is that even dissent is a cornerstone of American democracy.
Right. Exactly.
The Boston Tea Party, and you can go on and on. So the questions themselves were un-American and unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there was a conservative court at the time, and they upheld the contempt of Congress charge.
Mm-hmm.
And off to prison they go.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, you've likened it to what's going on today, and I think this movie couldn't come out at a better time. Because you see the parallels today. You mentioned the Benghazi hearing on Hillary. It's kind of eerie in a way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're compelling testimony from her under oath to try to get her to say that she made mistakes or screwed up. And I suppose doing a postmortem, forgive the terminology, of the situation is always needed and urgent to find out what did go wrong,
right,
and how you can correct those wrongs. But to point the finger and say you are responsible for what went wrong at any given embassy around the globe, I think is foolhardy.
Right.
And also, it became a political whipping stick, you know, where Kevin McCarthy himself said, in an interview, well, we were able to drive down Hillary Clinton's poll numbers by bringing her in for the Benghazi hearing.
Right.
It's like, so you're actually admitting.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I was thinking we want honesty from our politicians. We get it once every two decades, and that's the honesty we get, which is that we're scumbags.
Yeah, I know. It's like, here it is.
Here it is. We're assholes. We're scumbags. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And Jay Roach, your director, has said, quote, "This movie and what happened to Dalton Trumbull shows how you can use fear to spread a really bad idea." And I liken that to Trump. And I don't care what people's politics is out there, or yours or anybody else. I don't have a particular agenda to sway people. But when Trump uses comments like "most or all Mexicans are rapists," it's that same sense of sort of false fear, trumped up fear. That it's such a great movie to be coming out at this time to teach us, remind us of history and what harm we can do to one another.
It is. Anytime someone uses absolutes of any kind, I'm leery of them because they're careless.
Mm.
If someone says, those people, you know, look at what Ben Carson said. He doesn't believe that Muslims should be allowed to be, a Muslim should not be allowed to be president.
Right, right.
That's like, oh my God. It's like, it's insane.
Yeah.
That kind of just, you know, hyperbolic rhetoric that they're just flashing around. And I don't know. I mean, in some ways it's disappointing, and in some ways it's refreshing. I've said that here we have two non-polished non-politicians, and they are front and center, and they're leading the pack of the Republicans, and I think the polished Republicans who are behind are waiting for those two to make severe mistakes so they can take their 22%.
Right.
They're like, come on, baby.
They're just chomping
at the bit. Come on, shoot yourself in the foot now.
Yeah,
come on.
You can do it.
Every time Trump opens his mouth, I think they got their fingers crossed. Will this be the time?
Yeah. Well,
Will this be it?
Yeah, the thing that's shocking, it's a whole new level in our society, is I get outsider to the extent I don't have any experience in politics. But then when you're asked to have a little knowledge and experience and they push back with, well, how dare you ask me to know the president of Iran and blah, blah, blah. I'll just figure that out and I'll assign people. You know, if I asked Trump for $1 billion to build one of his casinos and let me run the process, he'd say I was crazy. And this is no different. And yet they get very bent out of shape about sort of being questioned on their knowledge. It's unbelievable.
It's very interesting to see how he rebounds. He has a sense of Teflon when he's talking about the immigration thing and castigating all Mexican Americans or Mexicans into a pool of less than human, which is ridiculous. Then you have what he said about John McCain, and you know, I prefer my heroes not being captured.
Right.
You know, and it's like, oh my God!
I know it's just
and his poll numbers go up again, and then he says the thing, you know. So on every level, he says, you know, I started with my father gave me a small loan of $1 million. And so he's like, okay, so he's not among us either. He's an elitist. He's this right. incredibly wealthy guy who has always been wealthy. Right. And so can he really understand who we are and what we do and
right.
as a people, as a nation? And no, of course not. But he doesn't seem to be hurt by any of the comments.
It's unbelievable.
He says. But I do want to say that you know, I think there's too much polemic influence and construct in politics today, and I'd love to see an end to that. I'd love to see if Trumbo does anything positive. It could be that you leave the movie and even have an argument over it, even discuss anything. Any kind of discussion is fair.
Yeah.
I just don't want us to look at someone who has a different opinion than your own and castigate themselves as some kind of villain, or that they're out hell-bent on destroying America because of their point of view. It's just different.
Yeah. I mean,
don't be afraid of it. Don't lash out out of fear and ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Accept it and learn by it.
Mm.
It doesn't mean that your point of view is less than. You can still hold strong to your point of view.
Right.
And you can not be threatened by it. There's let's from both sides, both
yes,
parties,
yes.
point the fingers at each other and saying, look what you're doing, you're going to destroy this country if your policies are enacted. And I think it's shameful and not helpful.
Yeah, I mean, you said something that was very apt. I have a quote here in reading up on you a bit. You said, you have a right to be right or wrong depending on how you see things. Once we lose respect for someone's opinion, all is lost. And I just thought that was such a great way to encapsulate this idea. And I think cable news has contributed to the divisive nature of our country, you know, because you get on Fox and everybody who watches Fox wants to hear the right wing agenda, and everybody who watches MSNBC wants to hear the left wing agenda, and people are talking over each other and not to each other. And I think it's just, it's, you know, I do think there are valid points on both sides and people need to listen more
and not be holding each other in judgment, and if someone misspeaks, not to jump on them and condemn them, but allow them to clarify. And if they still hold fast to some pejorative comment they made or something, then you can say, I can't disagree with you more. I think that's wayward thinking.
Right.
But I defend your right to say it.
Absolutely.
That's the whole point.
I know you have to jump in a minute. I just wanted to ask you real quick on the acting front. You had said about, you were in the soap opera Loving with you said, my proudest achievement is still when I was 25 years old and I knew I've done it. What is it in that context?
It is making a living and being able, as an actor, being able to call myself an actor. That's what I did for a living. That was my profession.
Right.
And something had happened, you know, I was working for a couple of years, in and out, survival jobs and that sort of thing, and then something clicked and something just changed within me and my point of view, and given an opportunity, and I was able to capitalize on it, but something just sunk and felt right. And from that point on, I've only been an actor for my adult life. I'm still very proud of that moment. That was it.
Yeah, it's not an easy achievement.
Yeah, from making that decision when I was 22, like we both discussed, to attempt something that you love to do and hopefully become good at.
Mm.
And I can fortunately say that, hey, I did something pretty good. So,
well, more than pretty good. By the way, I'm jealous of you because my wife is in love with you. She thinks you are so funny as Hal and Malcolm in the Middle that she just loved your character in that show, as I did too.
I enjoyed playing that guy. He was fun.
Yeah, and you played him opposite. It was an interesting approach that I read about, the way you approached that was, you know, which was that your strategy was to play the opposite of what the ensemble already had. So you had a mother who was bombastic, fearless, insightful, along with the kids. So you played the father gentle and timid and obtuse. Where did you get that smarts to be able to approach the acting that way? Is that just... I don't mean to say you're dumb or anything. I'm sorry. That came out wrong.
No. I was just searching.
Yeah.
Just searching, just wondering, and you start thinking, well, what makes a good couple? Those that get along with each other and have the same interests. Well, yeah, in real life, but in a comic life, if you're going to make a show, wouldn't it be funnier if you didn't tread the same ground? So you can imagine if Hal and Malcolm in the Middle tried to be bombastic and taking charge, you'd be battling with Lois the whole time and not so good.
Yeah.
So I just made a list of all the things she is and then wrote down the opposite emotion. And then that's what I focused on.
Yeah, it was great. My parents are the same way. My mother's still alive. My father passed away. My mother was in charge. My mother was Lois, and my dad would just go, whatever. And he just sit. It's like it was too exhausting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. So, I get it.
Anyway, I know you got tight time here. I can't thank you enough. The movie is Trumbo. Out now, go see it. I can't wait for the next thing. By the way, you made the movie Godzilla for us. You were great in that movie. You were really great.
It was fun to do, and you know, that was the first thing I did after Breaking Bad ended, and I really thought about it. I turned it down at first, and I thought, well, wait a minute, am I being snobbish here? I had such high regard for the writing and Breaking Bad that I thought, oh no, it has to be, whatever I do next has to be lofty.
Right. I read that
I loved Godzilla when I was a boy and just go have fun and play. And so, I gave myself permission not to take it so seriously and just enjoy the process.
I read that it scored a 20 on your project assessment scale, which I think is so awesome. You have a scale where you factor in story, script, role, director, and the cast, and you reach a number, and if that number's high enough, you'll do the project. Am I right?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Wow.
And that's my cap system.
That's right. You'd be a good bookie.
That's right.
Well, listen.
Taking numbers.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for the time. I can't thank you enough. It's really an honor to have you on. I'm such a huge fan, and we'll keep an eye out. And everyone go see Trumbo.